hospitality is there's a fine art to hospitality, both in being a guest and in being a host. So what most people think of when you think of hospitality, you think of, okay, I'm going to have people around for dinner, or I'm having people around for a party, or I'm having people coming out of town and they're going to stay with us for a few days. But what I'd like to challenge you on today, specifically for this group here, is on how to be a good guest. And there's an art to that. There's an art to being a good and thoughtful guest. So, do you want to... Okay, you do the clicking. Good. Okay. So if you think about the Romans, the early Christians in the Roman days, they had no church building to go to. They met in people's homes. So hospitality was extremely important there, that because that was the basics of their fellowship together as Christians. So in his book, he suggests three principles of encouragement. And if you think of hospitality, I think you can almost think of, it's not a technical synonym, but it's the synonym of fellowship and encouragement is what comes to mind when you think of hospitality. Okay, so scripture does command us not to forsake the assembling together of people. So we encourage one another, consciously attending official gatherings of our congregation. Biblical worship allows us to praise our Heavenly Father as well as to receive blessings from Him as He ministers to us. So it's a scriptural command to get together. So we mustn't forsake the assembling together. Mm. Having good fellowship is important, really important. And it doesn't say where or how necessarily. It can be a beautiful church cathedral. It can be your home. Greeting one another. It doesn't have to be a holy kiss. It can be a nice hug, an embrace, a handshake. So these are noticeable, tangible manifestations in a physical way. We greet one another. You make eye contact. You talk to the person.
Aww.
That's, yeah.
Kidding.
Okay, so there's a number of scriptures. If you're taking notes, you could put down, what have I got here, Romans 12:10. Okay, so Paul refers to hospitality here and getting to know families in a congregation. You do that through friendships. You do that through having them around to your home. You're not gonna get to know people unless you make an attempt to invite them around or corner them and have a conversation with them. So it's a tangible, deliberate, physical, not aggressive in a sense that you're aggressive, but in a sense that it's not passive. Mm-hmm. So you can't just sit in church and expect to get to know people if you don't actually make an effort. Mm-hmm. So it's a physical thing you need to do. Romans 16:5, 1 Corinthians 16:9, if you're writing down, Colossians 4:15, Acts 2:46, Acts 20:11. So the heart, it's a new PowerPoint for me. So the heart of hospitality is the encouragement of others. So when I asked you at the beginning what came to mind, encouragement and fellowship is really, really at the forefront of hospitality, in my opinion. So it's love in action, isn't it? If you go through the effort of having people around, it's you expressing your love in a tangible, physical way. It's the flesh and the muscle on the bones of love. Through caring acts of hospitality, the reality of our love is tested. Okay, so the focus of entertaining is impressing others. The focus of hospitality is serving others. And that's the difference. And if you know, especially with such easy access to the internet, and I'm sure all of you ladies are familiar with Pinterest, if you think of having a party and having people around and anything you can think of under the sun, you can find it on Pinterest, you can be sure. And it's very easy to get carried away in order to impress your guests. And look, if you can decorate lovely, fine. It's not that that's wrong in and of itself, but that's not the purpose. The purpose of hospitality is to serve others. And I think that, if you can keep bearing that in mind, then you'll do well.
It shows humility and love for the person.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So hospitality became one of the most significant practical expressions of the early worldwide family of brothers and sisters, this thus became one of the birthmarks as well as the hallmark of Christianity. So this really does go way, way, way back. So in many ways even, we're still a minority in a hostile world. And so friendship is very important. Whether you're a part of a congregation of 2,000, 20,000, or 20, our fellowship together and our mutual encouragement of one another in our small groups, in our churches, in our Bible studies is really something. So often that's what keeps us going from week to week, especially if you might be living in a household where the parents don't share your faith, or your siblings, or where you work in an environment that's hostile towards Christianity. Then this becomes even more important, and you sacrifice the time, even more important today in the kind of rushed society that we live in. Got to take the time to make it happen. So, Andrea put this in, which is such a good quote. In a world where convenience is king, the ease of eating out frequently trumps the labor of cooking, which is another reason why hospitality is an art that desperately craves cultivating. Mm-hmm. It's something you need to cultivate. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in a world where convenience... Oh, no, wait, that's the same text. Yeah. So that's just the next picture. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So
that's what cooking.
One of the times my sister was visiting. She's a phenomenal cook. And... all of us ladies in the house enjoy cooking. Okay.
So my mom's listed a few verses, but here are some other key verses that we'd like to share. There's lots of references in scripture, but we think these are some of the most important. Acts 2, verse 46. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts. And then there's Romans 12:13, which I think we've sort of covered already. Mm-hmm. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. It's my Auntie Debbie again. 1 Peter 4 verse 9 says, show hospitality to one another without grumbling.
Without grumbling.
They may not be actually hospitable at this very moment, but they're excited. That's the point. Okay, so the focus in Scripture on being hospitable includes ministering to fellow believers, strengthening the church, and caring for one another, as my mom's already sort of mentioned. Hospitality can be offered by all, to all.
What's that?
He's knocking at the door.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to be hospitable just to people. You can be hospitable to animals, too.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gents can be hospitable, young or old.
Oi!
No, it was the same suitcase, so that was part of the idea. Okay, so, on to Mom.
So, I had the privilege of growing up in a household where my parents forever had either some stray that my dad had picked up. I should back up a little bit for those of you that don't
person.
Know. I grew up in a missionary home, so my dad was often bringing somebody home, and my mom would need to suddenly be ready. And so I had the privilege of growing up watching my mother and my older sisters prepare for guests, or to see how my mother would respond to suddenly there's six instead of two, and you know, how do you stretch this chicken in times eight now instead of times four? You know, so and you have to do that in an unexpected, in a gracious, in a loving way. You can't be all frustrated. You can't stand there. That's going to make the guests feel very unwelcome. Mm-hmm. So you have to graciously accept the fact that hospitality can sometimes be. It's lovely if you can pre-plan it, make a plan, and choose Friday evening. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes you are going to just be caught off guard. So even if it's unexpected, you can still have a plan for the unexpected guest. So, obviously you've got it. That was a market in Spain, which was just phenomenal. Mm. Produce there was just incredible.
Gorgeous.
So how does one have a plan?
Well, you have a plan by looking up recipes, and by making a shopping list while you're looking at your recipes. But also it's a good idea to have things in your kitchen. Yeah. Like, you should always have tins of beans, maybe, or tins of tomatoes. Always have onions. Always have potatoes. So that in an unexpected moment, you can actually quickly whip together something with the things that you already have in your house.
I think when I was newly married, you said always have carrots, frozen peas, potatoes, onions, and some sort of frozen meat to pull out.
Yeah. Something like that. Always be ready for the unexpected. So you collect ideas. And this is, again, in your generation now where Pinterest comes in really handy. I still use, well, I do use the internet now as well, even in my old age, but I still primarily use recipe cards, ring binders. And
well, it's especially helpful when there's no
like
internet.
A great recipe card that she shared with me.
I learned from my mom.
Both of you.
Yeah. Okay, so form a hospitality committee. If you're part of a congregation, try and form it to get together with a group of ladies, maybe, or gents, and form a committee so that between the four, five, six of you, even if it's just two of you, that between the two of you, you can have a look out. Oh, hey, this person, she always comes on her own. Let's make sure she gets invited by somebody. Or, hey, that couple's new. Or, hey, they've just had a baby. Let's make sure that they're given food or have, you know, let's have them around. So if you have a committee, they can help you to make sure that the people in your congregation or your fellowship or your Bible study group are looked after. Okay, and again, this pertains to a church fellowship that you would be involved in. Volunteer to host visiting missionaries. Because there's, if your church hosts missionaries, which I hope they do, even if they're not staying overnight, host them for the Sunday lunch. I'll never forget a congregation Peter and I used to be a part of. In fact, that's how we met the Youngs. You guys met the Youngs? Tall Paul, Small Paul, sorry, the chalk artist. they came to speak at our church, and it was a Sunday, and Peter and I had never met them. And so we chatted with them after church, and they hadn't been invited by anybody, not by the pastor, not by anybody, none of the elders. So, of course, we had them around.
And they didn't live in the area.
And they didn't live in the area, that's correct. How can you not plan for them to be invited to lunch? It just, for me, that just is wrong. Yeah, so.
But that's a lifelong friendship.
And now it's turned into a lifelong friendship, that's correct. And I think some of the people that you have around, when you take the time to invest in other people, those will be lifelong friendships. It's not something you can do on Instagram, on Facebook, on WhatsApp, on the internet. You need to have face-to-face conversations around the dinner table, endless cups of tea and coffee afterwards. Get to know the person and invest in. And it is a sacrifice of time. Maybe you need to forego your Sunday afternoon nap, or maybe you need to forego some program you enjoy watching. Whatever it is, I promise you it will be a worthwhile investment. And get to know them. Ask them about their family. Talk to them about their background. Where do they come from? What makes them missionaries? Or what made them choose this fellowship? What made them decide to move to this area? Just anything. Where do their children go to school? Any of this. This is Hermanus. And don't rush your time together. If you have the luxury of knowing that you're going to have people around, so you've got a few days to prepare now, think about the environment in your home. When your guests walk through the front door, are they going to see chaos? Not even so much see, because if you've got small children and there's toys, that's fine. You don't need a Pinterest home. But there's a difference between normal, everyday things lying around, or, you know, a couch that's not in perfect repair, or, you know, that there's a difference between that and chaotic stress. Because chaotic stress can make your guest feel quite unwelcome. You know, this woman is not ready for me, and I feel bad now that I'm intruding on her time, and she's not, she's not ready for me. This is my late father and Hunter, and this is before Hunter and Andrea were even married, and this is at my parents' home in Arizona, and my dad was the kind of man who invested in individuals, and he could just pour himself into you as a person, and hours could go by, literally almost to the next meal, And you would have no idea that so much time actually went by. He was the kind of person that believed in eye contact, very special one-on-one fellowship with my dad. Yeah. I mean, we can't fit this many people inside of our home, so we have to all sit outside
and push tables.
Several tables together to fit everybody around. Never rush fellowship if you have the ability to have people around. Never rush them. But there's also a couple of principles of just along the line with involving your children. So let's say you've invited someone, okay, and suddenly your day's gone pear-shaped. You just, if you're a college student, you suddenly had an unexpected assignment, or if you're a young mother, suddenly your child had a meltdown, or if you're sick, or if you're single, suddenly you got caught up with something else, some project that you didn't expect, or maybe if you're at work, all of a sudden your boss said, you must stay that extra hour. Whatever it is in your individual circumstances, let's say it's gone wrong. You know guests are coming. So my advice would be to try the day before or the night before to prepare the area where you're going to have people. See that the dining room table is clear of all the homework books, all the computers, all the things that often get stacked on a dining room table in every home. See that that's clear, and see that your dishes are out, your cutlery, your glasses, not necessarily set, but available and out. And of course, because as I said earlier, you've now planned, you've prepared, you've shopped, you have what you need, but you're now running late. Put an onion in the oven and turn it off, because the fragrance is amazing. So when your people come through the front door, hopefully you've got a son or daughter, or maybe your spouse, or maybe you're invited hosting with another friend. Have them sitting, talking to the guests while you can quickly get that casserole in the oven, or chop up the carrots and get them going, whatever it is that you still need to do to prepare your meal. So, but if you set the tone for your guests, they're not going to feel like they're an inconvenience to you. Even if you are running late, you don't need to communicate that to your guests. Light a candle if it's in the evening and have them sit around the living room and
have music playing.
And as I said, that onion in the oven is a wonderful thing to do if you're running late. Because again, they walk in, they're like, oh, wow, something really good is cooking. Even if you're completely unprepared in the kitchen, they feel at ease and they feel welcome. You can give them something to drink, and so forth. And involve your children. If you've got children, or if you've got flatmates or roommates or whatever it is, involve them. Don't feel like you've got to do the entire thing yourself. The other thing, and Daniela and I were having a conversation about that the other day, it really doesn't matter where you live. You do not need a mansion,
a proper home.
Yes, it can be a teeny tiny little place. It can be an interesting home like that. It can be a little hobbit house that you can't stand up in. It can be whatever that is.
A shack on an island.
Yes.
For traveling missionaries.
That does not preclude you from having someone around. It really doesn't. Because you've got to eat, and you've got your campfire or whatever it is that where you're cooking. Maybe there's a communal kitchen. And you can put a picnic blanket outside your tent, and you can still have someone around and enjoy your meal.
Nature can be your ambiance.
Yeah, exactly.
Between a rock and a hard place. So
or a dorm room.
You don't even have to have a whole house.
You really don't. And I think sometimes, especially for girls, for women, they think, oh no, but I can't really have people until I have my own place. Really, actually, not true. If you're still living at home with your parents, no problem. Get their permission and involve them if they want to be involved. And if that's not convenient, then invite the people that you would like to minister, make a picnic and invite them to the park or to your front garden or to the beach, or invite them on a gentle hike and then have a picnic for them. So hospitality does not need to be a lovely kitchen with a 8-piece dinnerware and glasses and a fabulous meal. It can be. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm just trying to help you to see that it doesn't have to be. Hospitality, fellowship, affection like this can be offered on any level. It can even be a peanut butter and jam sandwich served on a lovely colourful paper plate with funky napkins and water. You know, it really doesn't need to be a gourmet meal.
So, Well, I have a funny story. When Hunter and I had been married for just... I don't think it had even quite been a year at that point. And we just moved into our second apartment. It was a two-bedroom, which was massive for us, because the previous was a 500-square-foot house. It was really tiny. The space between the couch and the dining table was literally about this. It was very small. And the only reason we had this dining room table bench seat set was because my grandparents had lovingly given it to us. We didn't have the space for it, but it meant a lot, so we would even cram 20 people in the room, and it was ridiculous. But anyway, second apartment, we had just moved in, we had a couch, our bed, I think that was, oh, and the dining room table set for six people. This is all we had in the house, furniture-wise, really. It was very empty. And then a family of seven or so decided, well, they were driving across the states, coming through Arizona, can we please stay the night? We have no beds for you to sleep in. We have some blankets and pillows, but that's kind of it, but you're welcome to stay. So they came through, they're very thankful. They had forgotten their pillows, so they had no pillows. Thankfully, we're kind of pillow hogs. My mom can attest to that, we have lots of pillows. So we shared our pillows, blankets, fold-out mattresses, whatever we had, but we had to borrow the fold-out mattresses from my in-laws. We had one person sleeping on the tiny little two-seater couch. It was quite ridiculous. We also had... We didn't have enough dishes. We didn't have big pots, so when I made them some porridge in the morning, I had to make two or three batches to make enough for them because there wasn't enough in there. I didn't have enough teacups for them, so they'd have to, some would have tea or coffee and drink it, and then I had to wash the cups to make some more for other people. It was quite bad, but you know, it was actually one of the most special memories we have from our early marriage. Another accident, we would always turn off our hot water heater, or our geyser, call it a hot water heater in the States, because it saved a lot of money. It was just two of us, we didn't need to have it running all day long. So out of habit, Hunter turned it off on his way to work in the morning. Unbeknownst to me, several hours later, Hunter would leave like 5:36 in the morning, the water was cold, and they were way too polite to tell me that it was cold, so I didn't realize that.
What cold showers?
So, yeah, and I asked them about it, and they were like, oh, it was a bit cold, but it was fine. But, you know, they still, when we talk with them still, they still tell us how special it was to stay with us, and I felt like the worst host in the world that I didn't have enough... I didn't have anything really to be a good host, but we had the fellowship, we took a picture together, we just spent hours together in good and I'd never met them before. That's another thing to add. I didn't know these people, they knew my dad. But yeah, just it really doesn't matter how little space you have or what lack of dishes you have. It still means a lot to the people you're hosting.
Yeah.
If you can do it so graciously.
Yes. Yeah. And try not to apologize too many times, like I tend to do.
Okay, so in many ways, what's more applicable to you is how to be a good guest, in that if you are planning on being missionaries, you will travel. And you can ask any of our field workers, when they travel across the country, within South Africa or wherever it is, they will generally stay with people. I mean, the thought of staying at a hotel or a bed and breakfast is unthinkable. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just from a financial perspective, the money tends to go into the vehicle, into the petrol, into the literature, getting to where you need to go, and so forth, supplying the love boxes, etc. So your focus of your finances generally goes there. So you're very much so dependent on being a good host, being a good guest. So, in the olden days of the mission, when I first joined, if you were waiting for a visa, very often you had to do that in Pretoria. And sometimes you would be there for 5-6 days waiting for a visa to come through, which then meant that you were at the mercy of someone's hospitality. And from my vantage point representing Frontline Fellowship, here's what you don't do. You don't stay at someone's home and take a four-hour bubble bath when there's one bathroom in the house. And we've had field workers do that. So that's just one example of something that you don't do. That's one example of how to be an unthoughtful guest. Okay, so I think I've said all of this. I think you can go to the next thing. How to be a good guest.
It's a big part of your work. In fact, a huge part. So when you travel, those of you, you can talk to John, you can talk to Aubrey, they will plan their trip from host to host and involve school meetings, church meetings, literature drop-offs, very strategically, very, very well timed, well planned, and making good use of our resources. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of hope. I mean, even just Andrea and Hunter traveling up to minister Barberton. In Barberton, they stayed with people along the way. So the people that they stayed with were people that they probably had never met. So if you can, as a guest, come bearing gifts. Now, it doesn't have to be a fancy bouquet like this. It can be one flower. It can be a candle. It can be a little jar of honey. It can be
books.
It can be a book. And we've got plenty of those around here. So, you know, you can come bearing something special. And when you arrive, offer your help. Find the nearest apron, tie it on, and see how you can get involved. And always be positive. You know, don't arrive at the front door with the people hosting you say, "Oh, that was a terrible drive. Oh, my word, that is the most uncomfortable bucky I have ever been in." And carry on about that, on and on and on about that. Never do that. Because remember, as a guest, you now are not only representing Christ, first and foremost, you're representing Frontline Fellowship, you're representing missions, you're representing the gospel. It's quite a big responsibility now for you to walk through that front door and they see something negative, that could put them off forever. Mm-hmm. A, of being a host, they're going to say, "I'm not ever hosting again, because if this is what they're like, no thank you." So it's quite a responsibility, really. Make absolutely sure, probably goes without saying, that you help with the cleanup.
And if you're spending the night, strip the sheets afterwards.
Yeah.
Makes it easier for them. And if you can, throw it in the wash too.
Yes.
Maybe in an area that doesn't have water restrictions.
Yeah. Leave the place tidier than you found it. Sometimes people will make up a couch for you because they don't have a spare bed. Make sure it's back the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And that your linen is folded up neatly in a stack. And that if you use the bathroom that you and you splashed everywhere, that you just wipe it dry with the towel that they gave you. Anything that you can think of. But most men are walruses in a bathroom. You know, they just water everywhere somehow. So, yeah, just dry it up. Try and, I know we live in the day of internet, we live in the day of WhatsApp, we live in the day of emails. Nothing wrong with that. I make full use of it. But travel with stationery. There's nothing quite like a thank you card. Just have a pack with you. And Andrea and I were talking about that just the other day, how you can even write a beautiful thank you card before you even leave on your trip. And then you can personalize it and customize it
as you go. Because sometimes you don't have much time to write.
Because sometimes you arrive and you're kept talking by the hosts because they're starved for fellowship. And you're talking until midnight and you've got to leave the next morning at 5 or whatever it is. And then, I didn't have a chance to write that out. So
another idea also with stationery is have some postcards from the country you're from the city you're from. If you're traveling around South Africa, for example, bring some postcards of Cape Town or something, and that can also be a nice personalized thing for them as if you don't have thank you cards per se.
Yeah. So that's what we've discussed now. Leave them a nice thank you note. You know, you want the people that you've been hosted by, you want them to say, "Oh, wow, this was actually just so much fun." Because these young people, not only were they thoughtful guests, but they invested in my children. So if you're staying in a home and there's several children, and remember that those children are now learning from you as well. Mm-hmm. So if you tell them about where you're from, why you're in missions, you never know who you might inspire for the next generation of missions. Peter used to stay. Who were those people? Were the
at the end in Swaziland? Yes, the cars and
yes, and the boy was how old when you first?
He was like a preschooler when I
first started home. Coming. Yeah,
but I spent some time with him, and he's now in England and still supporting.
And he's still supporting Frontline, so it just shows you.
38 years later.
And the other thing to just bring in at this point is that if you are planning on dedicating your life to missions, you will need to raise support. You will need to do deputation work, which is probably everybody's least favorite aspect of this calling. But remember that the people that you stay with, make sure you have their addresses, make sure you have their email addresses, and you will form your own list of people that you email them. So let's say you've gone from Cape Town all through South Africa, maybe you've gone up to Zambia, maybe through Malawi, wherever. Now you're back home. Now you've got everyone's email address. You create a program and you email them all. You thank them again for your hospitality, for their hospitality. You tell them about how the Lord blessed your trip and you maybe tell them a few details. And when you do that on a regular basis, remember that people like to support a track record. Most people who support you financially, they don't want to support an idea that you have for next year. They want to support you because they can see what you have done already. So sometimes going into mission, well, in fact, not sometimes, it has to be a leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And financially in particular, Peter can tell you hundreds of stories of starting out on a trip with no way did he have enough money to get there and never mind get back. And that is, it's a huge leap of faith. But these people will form the support base for you, and your communication with them is vital, and it must be regular. If you're trying to raise a support base, whether it's within South Africa, or in the US, or around in Europe, your regular communication with them, telling them it doesn't have to be long, it doesn't have to be fancy, it doesn't have to be a doctrinal thesis. It just needs to be you conveying your faithfulness to the Lord's calling and your trust in Him. And you don't need to ask for money all the time. You can just share some of your struggles, or share something that you're looking forward to being able to do, and as the Lord provides, you look forward to being able to be faithful and obeying His intuitions. So again, you can see how this whole thing about hospitality is not just having people around for a meal. It's also, in my opinion, for you, more important for you to hear how to be a good guest, especially if you add that into being called into mission someday, forming that friendship circle of people who are ultimately going to be your prayer base and your financial support base. So it's just vital. And if you've left a good physical impression and you've been a thoughtful guest, I tell you, it just does wonders. Yeah, so the friendships that you develop over the years of traveling, they'll grow into lifelong friendships, and they will really have a life-lasting effect on everybody. Edith Schaefer, how many people, you all know Frances Schaefer, probably. Frances Schaefer? No?
I've just heard of the Schaefers.
Yeah, okay. So the Schaefers ran a place called Le Brie in Switzerland. And Edith Schaefer, his wife, she wrote a lot of what I say is, I was inspired by the books she's written. If you get a hold of any of Edith Schaefer's books, I highly recommend them.
Very, very good.
Okay, so I'll just read it to you. A Christian above all people should live aesthetically and creatively. We're supposed to be representing the Creator, and if we acknowledge the Creator that He does exist, then we represent the Creator. So whether you're married and have a family, or whether you share a flat or a house with one or a number of people, whether you still live at home with your parents, whether you're a man or woman, the fact that you're a Christian should show in some practical area of a growing creativity and sensitivity to beauty, rather than a gradual drying up of creativity and a blindness to ugliness. So if you, all you have to do is go to our beaches, or travel around Cape Town, go up on the mountain, which we will tomorrow, and just be in awe of God's beauty around us. So if God can create something so beautiful for us to enjoy, then how much more important is it for us to live as beautiful people in terms of representing Christ? And it doesn't need to be fancy, expensive, and showy, but it needs to be pure, and it needs to be loving, and it needs to be gracious. Even if it's simple daisy chains, it doesn't matter. If it's beautiful, then it represents Christ. It represents Christ through you. So, any questions? We have a very full household at the moment. Many of you wouldn't have been to our home yet. We live in Pinelands. We've lived there since 1991. And Andrea and Hunter live in a cottage at the back of our property. So at any one given time, there's 9 people and 6 kitties on my property. And it makes for an interesting, and there's different personalities and different strengths and, you know, different, and it's sometimes trying and...
It's busy without guests.
Especially without guests. Yeah. We're a very full household.
We've had a family of 11 visit us and stay over as well.
During renovations and chemo?
Yeah. Yes, I had 11 people in the midst of my... I just finished chemo and I was in the middle of radiation and had people staying. It was...
The upstairs was being renovated.
The upstairs,
so there was barely a floor.
They were upstairs with sleeping bags, yeah.
So, for example, like when you were talking earlier about... if you have unexpected guests and you suddenly have to stretch up one chicken, 14 people, how would you do that gracefully? Other than quickly trying to prepare something, would you mention it and say, oh, I'm just quickly putting, how do you do
ideally
that gracefully?
Ideally not. And again, it depends on the circumstances. So best case scenario, you've got another family member that can entertain the guests with something to drink, with stories, with whatever. Now, you've got this chicken, which if there's 4 of you, you can easily cut up and give everybody gets a portion. When there's that many, you've got to debone the chicken, or you've got to shred the chicken. Now maybe you weren't planning on having rice. Now you must have rice. Because
or quinoa or couscous.
Or couscous, quinoa, whatever, yeah. Now, quickly add in those potatoes, which are sitting in your pantry, ideally. Quickly boil them up so that you've got something else to fill. And again, try and always have some custard powder, or so that you can also serve a dessert for unexpected guests.
What type of ice
cream? Or some long life custard, or a tub of ice cream. Again, it depends on your circumstances. If you're in a dorm room, chances are you're not going to have that many uninvited guests. You know, so this is assuming you have a bit of a pantry and a freezer and a fridge. So yes, if you know the people, and they've brought guests, maybe invite, and you don't have any help, invite the lady to come in and help you. Or the young man, if they enjoy cooking, they have to be women. Help them, she can quickly come in and help you. And again, your attitude, and I know for a fact that this is something, I wear my feelings on my sleeve way too easily. If I get caught off guard, my first go-to reaction is stress. And that's not good. Not good at all. And you certainly don't want your guests to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want them to, above all, you want them to feel welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need to quickly rethink, and this comes with experience, that you can't now have chicken portions, you have to shred that chicken, just as an example.
And I guess also not mentioning it falls into the same category of not apologizing the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
I struggle with that.
Yes. Always explaining yourself.
Yeah.
If somebody compliments you and you just, oh, well, I got it on sale. Just enjoy the compliment. You know, you don't have to justify what you're wearing.
Yeah.
Or your shoes, or your meal. Or your, you know, yeah. It's, yes.
I was thinking, if you have guests and they ask, can I help with anything? You just say, no, it's okay, sit here, or do you engage them in helping? Because my first reaction, because I'm used to this. Oh, here's the thing. Do this.
But yes.
Some people say, no, just sit there. I'm fine.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, I think, I don't know, you may want to answer that, but just off the top of my head, it very much so depends on the guest. If you know these people, absolutely, rope a few of them in. And in fact, if you think about modern homes, most of them are open plan now, or many of them are open plan. So the guest sitting there can't help but see that you're now jumping around in the kitchen and suddenly, and if they're astute guests, they'll see. But it's okay. And if you do it in a light-hearted manner, then they will also relax and not feel bad for you.
And they might even feel more relaxed helping you.
Exactly. And it makes it very conversational and definitely involve the women, especially if you know them. If you've never seen them before, you might feel a little bit more, you know, awkward inviting them. But if they offer, and if you're comfortable with that, absolutely, I would say engage them.
That links with being a good guest.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Yes. Anyone else? Yes.
I just want to also comment on being a good guest in the mission field. I think it's important to be on the lookout, be thoughtful of what is on the table, what you should eat and what you should rather not. Like, for example, we were in Zambia and they had this little bit of Milo they bought for us at one pastor's conference. But we know it's expensive and it's very special to them and yes. so on. So rather not use the things. Or yes. like at one place there was Nutella on the table. Oh, and they were like, wow. This was a gift from Germany. Mm. And I just went ahead, put it on my bread, and only after I'm like, probably should not have done that because that was a gift they got from Germany. So
yes.
to always be thoughtful of how your hosts are
yes.
also.
Mm. Yes, that's a very good point, Aniska. That's a very good point. Growing up in Europe, my father ministered into Eastern Europe, into the Eastern Bloc countries. And in those days, it was forbidden to go in as a Christian. It was forbidden to be a Christian. And my dad smuggled Bibles in and was supporting and encouraging the underground church. And that's a subject for another talk. But my point is that we knew that the people hosting, we weren't allowed to stay in the home. The government forbade Romanians to have people staying with you overnight. So because they wanted the economy to be supported through the hotel industry. Nothing in the hotel worked, but you had to stay there. But we were guests for meals in their homes often, and we knew that the meal they were serving us was at great cost, not just financially, but just trying to find what they were serving us. So they would have to barter for food. So, you know, we knew, for example, that a kilo of coffee would enable them to get eggs, or would enable them to get meat, or would enable them to get bricks if they were building. And we knew that if we traveled in bearing those sorts of gifts, that they could barter. But as Aliska just pointed out, we tried also to be very mindful of what we ate. Not that you don't eat. If your meal is cooked, it's not that you, oh no, thank you. You do want to eat what, because they've graciously provided you with this meal, but you want to be mindful with the things that they serve you maybe afterwards, special things, like maybe it's a chocolate or something. You don't have to have all of them. You can have one. You don't have to have four. That's a very good observation. And also, to be sensitive to the fact that you probably will encounter being served something that you're just not prepared to eat. And again, I'm not saying you have to eat it. Maybe John has a different opinion there, I don't know. But you need to work out a gracious way around that. If you really just think you cannot stomach eating it, try and push it around your plate and quickly give it to your neighbor, without the meal, or whatever works. But don't say to your host, I'm not going to eat that. And preferably don't even ask for this.
Or if you're a vegetarian or something, you know, eat the food you can eat and just like, oh, you know, I'm actually full and... You know, and just eat the vegetables and just leave the meat aside. Or
don't even help yourself to meat.
Yeah.
Just want to add on that.
Since
I'm kind of a vegan, but not 100%. So in Africa, I did not say no to when there was carpenters, like fish or whatever, and they do go through all this effort to like taste this fried fish, or they made quails for us. And that was the saddest. Like they had in the kitchen... Oh. These cages were favorite.
Oh no! Wow,
so cute. And then, tiny quails. And then they prepared it for us, and it still like had some eggs inside and so on. It's a what do you call it? A valuable.
It's a delicate.
delicate. So it was. They went all the way to make that for us. So, we just ate it and said thank you, and this is nice. And like Tarita was sitting next to me, so she would like most of the time take some of the meat up from my plate and stuff. But you must be sensitive.
That's the thing. That's
so also like I was just thinking now, and I've learned this from you guys a lot, that you don't have to necessarily be hosting to be hospitable.
Yes.
Like even how you always sending rusks and biscuits and that. Yes. So you don't have to necessarily be hosting to be loving and hospitable.
Yes. Yes. A good point. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what my mom also taught us is because we are a big family, and some if we go to other people, to be a good guest is don't, even though they offer the food, don't don't like eat a lot, even though you might be more hungry. Just hold yourself in and
don't eat them out of house and home, ideally.
Don't eat everything up because there is.
On that note, as a guest, you can even bring a dish, even if you didn't ask.
Yes, just offer to bring
a favorite dessert, some side, or even a salad.
Especially if you know that that they're not maybe financially so well off.
Important points, Mr. McField. If you have bought gifts of food, biscuits, chocolates, whatever, give it to them after the meal when you're leaving. Because if you give it to them at the beginning, they will serve it up for you as part of the meal. If you arrive and you give people food, inevitably they're going to assume you want to be dished up with it, which is not the idea.
Yeah.
So food, it's better to give them as you
eat. Unless you've said, I'm bringing dessert, or I'm bringing
that's
to the dish, then that's part of the meal. Yeah. But if you're giving them gifts, yes, absolutely. Just recently, Peter's cousin's children were in our home, and I'm in the kitchen, and Peter was handing out gifts. Now, what I didn't know is that he had given them Quality Streets or whatever. So the cousin, this little girl, she's what, 10, so she comes around to the kitchen, offers me one. Now, I thought those were ours, so I said, oh, let's put them in a bowl. Meanwhile, they were hers, but I didn't know that.
She wanted to share them.
And she did want to share, yes. But I'm thinking, oh, well, if these are bowls, it's a much nicer way to present. Meanwhile, they were actually hers. So, yeah.
And then they left without them, so we ran out with a Ziploc bag.
John, did you have a comment?
I think it's important. Every one of us has a spiritual gift. And you can bring that to whoever your host is. And you did speak about that quite a bit. But it is important, and I've seen some people do that very well. Some of you may know David Frew. He used to really bless his hosts well because he was so good at family ministry things. And whenever we would go somewhere, he would minister to the people around the table.
Mm.
And we all have gifts, either gifts of speech or gifts of mercy in one of those categories. And always be looking out for how we can actually minister to our host. Some people might come very far to hear what you have to say if you're on a mission, but your hosts are right there. And some of the best ministry we've had have been with our hosts, sitting around the table, ministering to their children or something like that. And it makes them very excited to receive you back.
Yes, yeah.
And also, sometimes we've realized that just singing together, if you have time, just get to, if you have new books, just let's sing together.
Yes, good idea. And I think children growing up in homes where hospitality is offered are enriched a hundredfold because they've seen, and if you're hosting and you have children and you know you're hosting someone from a particular area, try and prepare your child for where that is. Show them on a map where it is and what language they speak so that your children can engage intelligently. Even if they're very little, they can say, what kind of food do you eat in? Or, whatever questions, they can ask childlike questions. So that's another aspect of involving your children, both as hosts and as guests. If you are traveling with your children on the mission field and you're going to stay somewhere, encourage your children to engage either with their children or to politely ask questions of the host, or at least say, thank you for having me, and, teach them at a very young age to be good guests. Yeah. And the larger the family is, like, you come from a large family, so you have to consider one another in your family. So you already have an advantage there, and then your parents have taught you how to consider the people that you're with. So it's an amazing blessing to have. We've been blessed. My parents, when we lived in Austria, first we were in a very small house, and my mom had a rule, because my dad was forever coming home with people, and we would be woken up at midnight to vacate our beds so that these guests could stay there. And finally, my mom put down a rule and said, if they come after midnight, our kids stay in their beds.
Only midnight?
And the guests can sleep on the floor or mattress or couch or whatever. So your family might need to have its own rules and regulations there. But again, if you look back, I look back with incredible fondness of the people that I met growing up. And for me, it was a cultural enrichment of people that came through our home as missionaries. And I think if you encourage your children to be excited about it,
and not earn more guests and share our table again. If you're excited about having people, then they will be too. They will learn, and hopefully they will grow up to offer hospitality as well.
When I was picked up by Don McElvaney's children from Denver Airport once, they were asking, it was like a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old, and they were asking no end of questions about Africa and missions and testing. And the younger brother in the back seat was there with a notebook, noting it down and so on. And a couple of hour drive, get their mother and said, I've never had children interrogate me so effectively. I said, I hope so. They've got to do assignments on it. They were homeschoolers, and I was doing missionary and geography assignments. That's not a bad thing for your children to have an assignment.
Yeah, that's right.
I can also attest to the joy and hospitality that you can get from your parents. I know my mum's explained her sort of background and how her parents were always hosting people from all over the world. My parents have done that. And Hunter and I love hosting people. Hunter's parents were also very hospitable. People have come in the middle of the night to stay or to just visit, and sometimes they're in desperate need. I've been there myself when those situations have happened, and they're tired. They want to go to bed. They like to go to bed early. They don't want to be up till after midnight, but they've done it, and they do it together. And even though one can go to bed, they want to support each other in that, and we've experienced that on both sides of our family, and we love having people. Actually, I forgot to mention the family that stayed with us. They also came around 1 a.m. They had some flat tire, and they were supposed to come around like 8 or 9, and then hour after hour passed by, and we're like, okay, we're going to sleep as long as we can, and we slept until they called us when they arrived, and it was a gated community too, so they couldn't just show up at the door. They had to be let in, but we weren't afraid to host because we had that example for us. So for your children in the future, if you have children already, I can say, no matter how young they are, it'll be a testimony.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because someone Jeremy's age is sure that those people have come to see him.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that is very intimidating when you're a missionary is being a host cross-culturally.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been with people, first-time missions and that, and they often don't know how to act when they are in a totally different culture.
Mm.
And they're, it's dinner time or something, and they sort of stand around, they're awkward, they don't know what to do. Because there are customs, there are ways of doing things. But one thing that sort of translates across any culture is your attitude.
Mm.
Being joyful and being grateful. That translate. I haven't met a culture where those things are not appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to be with them. Start speaking to them. Be so glad when they give you food. Thank you so much for receiving us. Thank you. Say thank you to the women who are serving.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, if you do that, you will get huge, huge points. Often in many cultures I've gone to, the women are not appreciated at all.
Mm-hmm.
If you go and you thank them, they will remember you, and they'll be so happy when you come back again. So your attitude will translate across any culture. Just bear that in mind. You may feel awkward and out of place, but just force a smile onto your face and say thank you for everything that you get.
To add to that, in African culture, you shouldn't ask a person, would you like supper, would you like some tea, can I bring you some drink? Because they pre-programmed say no. Because the only reason you'd ask is because they don't have enough, and you're giving them a chance to save face, so you should say no. And I know people like from Zambia who went to America and they weren't fed for days on end because our host would say, would you like some breakfast? They'd say no. Just bring it. Because in African culture, if you've got, bring it.
Mm.
You don't ask, because if you ask a person, would you like, then you meant to say no.
So set out the tea and coffee and tell themselves.
And let the person choose. And in fact, that's what the Africans do. They bring you like everything they've got, and you take what you want. You don't have to have it all, because they're going to live off whatever you didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So you. But the main thing is just don't ask, just pray.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sure we should bring it to an end. We can talk over lunch if anybody else wants to talk more, but I think we're running a bit behind.
It's okay. We've adjusted it.
Have you? Okay. Anyone? else? Calvin, any funny stories you want to say about hosting people? No?
Well, if you want funny stories, you can pick my dad's brain. Oh. He's experienced everything.
Okay, but if we have the time, you need to tell the story about him. In fact, I keep saying Peter needs to write a book on some of his hospitality stories. Yeah, my dad as well.
Stories.
Yeah, maybe choose a couple of choice ones and tell them, Peter.
Well, I should just say that Bill Batten was once a guest speaker at a Welsh mining town, and they offered him, and he was preaching for a week, typical crusade thing, and they gave him a bed, which had two other people sleeping in it, but they were on shifts, coal miners. So the bed was not just black with soot, and because they'd come in, but he had a certain allotted 8-hour slot. And so he'd wake up in the morning, there'd be someone standing by the bed, holding his helmet, sort of waiting for him to get out that he can get in. He said the bed was never cold. Literally, greasy, grimy, dusty. But that is not too unusual. But I think from my experiences of all the weird things, spent months sleeping in caves and huts with chickens and rats and everything else. But Omaha, Nebraska. I was invited to a home that was a small but double-storied house. They put me on a couch, but the couch was a kind of couch that had these high backs and was quite shallow. So I was too tall to stretch out. I couldn't stretch out. I had to have my knees bent. But you couldn't sleep lying on your back because you'd be lying off the side. You had to sleep on the side. You could only face one way because if I faced the other way, I'd fall off. It wasn't deep enough. And it was so high back, and right next to it was a cuckoo clock that every 15 and it wasn't just a nice old Swiss cuckoo, it was a real modernized, weird, it would wake you up incessantly. You'd be lying awake, they're waiting for there were two dogs, they would be sticking their long, wet nose into your face ready to see if you're still awake. The door had to stay open because the air conditioner, which was right over the couch, was needed for the people upstairs. So it was belching out this very, very, very high, freezing kind of air. And because the door had stayed open, but I did fall asleep some stage. So I woke up to two little girls standing over me, giggling and wanting to watch me get ready and get dressed and everything else. And I was there 5 nights. And I must say, some of the most... I've been more comfortable sleeping on rocky ground in a cave. It just shows how... And I don't think the people there understood that wasn't comfortable. I would have slept on the floor if it wasn't for the two dogs. But there was... You know, I've been given homes where they've got this bed that's like a hammock. And it's like a banana. It's totally sunken in. And with that sort of thing, you just stretch out sleeping bag and sleep on the floor. Because the bed is just so uncomfortable. Mm. I've walked into a home and the entire bed was just crawling with insects, crawling. The whole thing was just moving, shimmering.
Yeah.
Non-stop, and everywhere there was just cockroaches and flies and every kind of thing. And on that occasion, I did what you told never to do. I went and pitched my tent in the garden and the host was horrified. No, but you know, best bed and it must be comfortable inside. No, really, and I mean, I'm sure I did the wrong thing because
you could have picked up something.
I could. There were so many. I'm talking about thousands of insects. Lice, fleas, flying cockroaches. That was Le Sorte. Yes, I think the most uncomfortable I've ever been was in a place that I want to rest.
And talking about the opposite of being a good guest, we were chatting yesterday. And as a family, and the mother was talking about how someone she knew was wanting to start this women's ministry and how she's gone up into Africa to try and, because her son is a videographer and whatnot, and they're wanting to show the incredible things that women are doing throughout Africa and that type of thing. So she has this beautiful idea and whatnot, but oh my gosh, she's so prim and proper and well-to-do and everything. and she must be the most horrendous guest I've ever heard of. And she goes there and she goes, no, there's a spot on this sheet. Please, can you change the sheet? And there's, oh no, that's not, that plate's not quite clean. Please, can we just wash it again? And I was cringing. I was like, I was so embarrassed for her and quite angry, actually. Mm. So never do that.
Yeah.
And rearrange somebody's cupboards.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yes, that's hard for me not to do. Yeah. So if you are a guest somewhere and you do see that the plate is, just discreetly put it under the table and quickly use your dress or your shirt or your serviette and clean it yourself.
Or suck it up.
Put it back. Or just exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, thanks everyone.
I think I have another one.
Yes, okay.
Which sometimes happens. It's not so nice, but if you do find an unwelcome thing in your food, don't say,
ew,
here's something. Yeah. Just get rid of it very
just,
quietly.
Just discreetly don't take it out of your food, like it's long hair.
Dining at a fine restaurant where they are looking for their stars. Yeah. This is homemade,
yes.
So
yeah.
Shame. Yeah, it happens.
So don't
say. Yeah, and the fact that American people could have hosted Peter like that is just inexplicable to me. I don't know how anybody thinks that someone, it's not like Peter's even phenomenally tall. He's average height, and you've got this little couch. How do they think that's going to work for 5 nights?
And something like that is planned in advance, so you could have borrowed a mattress.
It's not like Peter came unexpected.
Or the kids could have given up a bed.
My word. I cannot relate to that. I really can't. I don't... That's why it should go into a book.